everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present, and future of all things business and esports. I'm your host, Joe Hills, from Looking for a Group, and we have a very special episode for you guys today. We are rolling on forward with our Team Focus series, and today we are joined by Marty, the CEO of Splice, and Grant Russo, the European Operations Manager and LCS Manager for Splice over in Europe. Guys, thank you very much for jumping on the show today.
Hey, no problem.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I didn't want to attempt your last name because I've done a bit of research, and Marty, you don't really seem to care if people use it or not.
I'm like the only Marty in esports, so it doesn't really matter anymore.
Cool. Let's just jump right into it. I would really love to just pick your brain on kind of how Splice is organized, what's the unique selling position for the brand, both to players and for sponsors. But before we get stuck into that, Marty, if you'd like to just kick us off with your story, journey, and how you became involved in esports, and Grant, we'll get to you afterwards.
Yeah, sure. So my story is a little more complicated than most, though I don't think it's that uncommon for those of us that are in leadership positions or positions of having been around a while that we came in roundabout ways. I was not a former player. I actually have a degree in theater, and I went and moved to New York City, and I worked in theater and film and television for about 10 plus years and loved it, traveled the world, had some great experiences. But that was very much a traditional entertainment thing. I was producing shows and production managing and building them. I taught at a high school for a while. It was performing arts school where a lot of the celebrity kids go. Very traditional theater career. I got in my 30s and I wanted to move back home to Rochester, New York, which is where I'm from. And I wanted to have kids and such. And so I ended up having to figure out what else to do because you can't do an entertainment career. So I thought from Rochester, and that's an important point I'll come back to. And so I ended up going, well, what else am I interested in? Well, I'm a huge tree hugger. People know I'm big on that stuff. And so I went and got a degree in professional tree hugging, I like to say. So I've got a master's degree in environmental health and safety management. And then I went off and worked in manufacturing. I was at a paper company for about 5 years. And I actually think I learned more about how to run a business there than I did in entertainment, despite the fact that I'm back in entertainment now in esports. Because I spent that time learning what it was to have a real budget, real responsibility, and real accountability, because people actually die if you screw up in safety, you know, and, you know, things get really, really bad if you have a bad spill in the environment environmentally. So I think it helped from a seriousness perspective and how I ran the business. And then while I was working at the paper company, I found esports as a fan, as a World of Warcraft player. So I'm your typical old school Warcraft nerd, play a lot, way too many hours of that game. I ended up first as a raiding a lot, and then found PvP and was instantly hooked. Never got very good at it. I think the highest I ever got was like 2100, which if you're anyone Warcraft listeners knows out there, that's not much. I was definitely not a competitive player. But I really loved it, was passionate about it, so I started working on the side, writing guides and stuff like that. I used to run a website called laserchicken.com. So you can kind of guess where the name came from. Sure. And it was a website for PvP Moonkins in Warcraft, which is a very small audience, as you can imagine. And I was doing that as purely a hobby. And I got really hooked into esports around back when Warcraft was trick videos, basically, where you'd have like someone would record all their PvP they did for a while, and they'd make like the next version of all the really cool slick outplays they did. I guess it's the equivalent of a trick shot video in Call of Duty, right? They were in match competitive matchmaking, but it wasn't competitions between teams I was watching back then, and that got me really, really hooked. You'd be like, when's a new Hydra Mist video gonna come out or something like that, you know? And at the time I hooked in with a startup that was looking at esports. This is back 2013, 2014. And I was doing some writing with them because I was writing with my own blog. And they had asked me, hey, do you think you could help us launch some tournaments? And I said, yeah, I mean, I've done productions that were, you know, millions of dollars. And I had actually helped on some productions, I guess, in the Warcraft scene, you know, nothing of my own lead, but I'd helped. And so I ended up leading some productions for them and putting up some World of Warcraft tournaments, big ones with Blizzard and such. And it was really awesome, but I was still, I had two kids, I was a dad, I was doing that. And I was like, this is a hobby I do on the side. And interestingly, we didn't set out to be a pro team. And most old esports folks know this story, but I guess a lot of people probably don't. We originally were called followesports.com. And Follow Esports was a website, as it sounds like. And there was no such thing as a Follow Esports pro team originally. It was a TV guide for esports. And it comes from me being a big Hearthstone fan. And I would turn on Twitch and see a Hearthstone stream half over. And I was like, why didn't I know this was on? Why is there no place to find out when esports is on? So we built this website, and it was actually going pretty well. And this is like early 2015. But we were trying to figure out how we were going to get people to know about our website. That's not easy, you know? And by the way, I swear I'm getting close to the end of the story, but it is a long one. but at the time, we had won a local business plan competition here in Rochester where we had entered built a business plan and trained and understood the best way to forward with our business. And in the end, they gave us a check for $25,000, and we had some actual money, not much, but actual money. We said, so what can we do to grow this business? And I think we had like maybe $17,000 left after we'd paid for like the contractors and stuff like that. And we sponsored some little tournaments, and we did some Facebook ads and Reddit ads, things like that. And they were working, but we weren't getting that big push. It was going to run out at some point, right? And so we were starting to talk to some investors, but nothing had really taken off yet. And we were sponsoring this Counter-Strike weekly show match. It was called CS Select. And it was a very small spend for us. And we were like, what can we do to like as a big oomph? We were thinking about sponsoring a team, but we looked at some of the prices and we're like, that's just unfathomable for a startup like us with no funding. And the guy who ran CS Select goes, why don't you just get a team? And we're like, well, what do you mean get a team? He's like, just go make a team. You know, you can go get a Counter-Strike team right now and you could call it followesports.com. And I was like, that's a thing you can do? He's like, yeah, look at Kinguin. Because at the time, everyone knows Kinguin had one of the best Counter-Strike teams, right? It was called Kinguin.net. And if you look at North American Counter-Strike back then, the team names were Sponsorless, Orgless, Sponsor Us, and things of that nature. And we saw that opportunity and said, why not, right? And so in August of 2015, we took on our very first sponsor check from an angel investor locally. And he believed in the idea of saying, maybe we'll get a team for 3 months and see what that does. And we picked up our Counter-Strike team. And we called it followesports.com, and all of a sudden everyone knew who we were. And all of a sudden people were visiting our site, and it was kind of a cool thing. But what was interesting is we really right away realized there was opportunity to pick up some other games. So we said, hey, what about Super Smash Brothers? They were right on the cusp of that big blow up there, right, when Smash got really big. And then what about World of Warcraft? That was our game of love, so it made a lot of sense to go back into that game and pick up a team there. And that all kind of led to this moment where we've just taken this little bit of money, this small check to do the in these small teams. And if you recall, Odie from Dignitas announced, sure, hey, we have two teams in LCS. We have to sell one, right? And I'll never forget sitting in my office in my basement. It's like the stereotype of a basement nerd, right, and playing his video games. Looking at the screen, and there reading an article about Odie, and it said I said to myself, man, how cool would it be if we could buy an LCS team? Because I didn't mention it, but I'm a huge League of Legends fan. And I went, why couldn't we? What if we did, right? And so I went back to my investors who we were working around right then. And I said, so imagine that our website was not an esports website. It was a basketball website. And the Milwaukee Bucks were for sale at a reasonable price. And we could change the name of them to the name of our website. It might even drive some revenue of its own. Would you do that? He's like, well, if the price is good and it had that opportunity, I think that's a good idea. And I said to him, well, the Milwaukee Bucks are for sale. Can we go buy them? And after having a good laugh about that, we drank some beers and strategized. And at this little bar in Rochester on a Wednesday night in the late summer of 2015, early fall, I decided to reach out to Odie at Dignitas. And I sent him an email and said, it was like info@teamdignitas.net or something like that. You know, I didn't know him, right? And I just said, hey, I'd like to talk about this. And I got an email back from him the next day. Says, great, let's have a call. And I guess this is one of those moments that's really defining for us as an organization was Odie had a lot of suitors at the time. There were definitely organizations who I know of who went after that slot. He had the North American slot as well, people were going after. And in the end, part of it was that he believed in us as a valuable ally down the road, you know, like that we were legit and he liked working with us. And it's more than the money, you know, in this industry, as a lot of people who've been around a long time know. We'll all have that opportunity to make more money in the long run if we have the right partners over time. So we acquired the team, we raised that money, and I guess you'd say the rest is history.
Well, that's one hell of a journey. I assume that you must be pretty hyped for the resurgence of World of Warcraft esports, right? That's on the horizon, or is that game fully in the past for you now?
I'm definitely a fan. I definitely still watch it.
Yeah.
Interestingly, our general manager, who's a former like all-time great in that game, is still competes on the side. So last year he made BlizzCon as a competitive player while running our teams, and it's still pretty crazy. He finished his job and then like from midnight to 3 a.m. he's practicing with his team, and I think they placed fifth or fourth. But for me, I think that the game itself is still such a wonderful game. It will always face the viewership issue of if you don't play the game currently, it's very hard to watch because there's so many abilities and it's not a great spectator sport. But sure. Even I don't play it. I haven't played it in 3 years. I only get to sort of enjoy it in a nostalgic way, but I don't really know what's going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. It does seem super chaotic when I try and watch. I pretty much played for 3 months before making the terrible move to go and play Guild Wars instead. And I always will kick myself because there are so many stories that I've heard from people that have put thousands of hours into that game and loved every second of it. Grant, just take us through your background nice and quickly from leaving EY.
It's not just me, so.
Yeah, we've got a double whammy. I know that you had background with building up your own org prior to EY, but just take us through your journey of last year.
Sure. I'll keep it short and sweet. So yeah, so I finished a chemical engineering degree last year and anticipated going into finance, which I did as an accountant. So I was doing accountancy. And I had some time off effectively between finishing uni and starting that job, you know, from May to September. And I was a huge LCS fan, League of Legends at the time. I thought, hey, wouldn't it be super cool to run my own org, basically set my dearest Marty, right? So, you know, get a team and do it, you know, zero money, zero backing, zero anything. Just thought it'd be a bit of fun and did it with a friend that I met, and the two of us ran it. And did rather well considering I had zero backing, did really well. You know, got to September, sort of ended it there because just didn't have the time to do it. But it kept my passion and just showed me what it takes to, you know, manage teams and run an organization. And then about 3 months into my accountancy role, I just thought this just isn't right for me. Like this isn't my passion. Like esports is my passion. So took the plunge to call it quits with that and try and find a way into esports full time using that knowledge from running my own team. And about 2 months later, after leaving the role, I got an offer from CounterLogic Gaming over in America to be their player development coach and team manager. So I went and did that for a split. Learned quite a lot about what it is to be team management and sort of to help develop players. But I very much wanted to be a little bit more on the sort of, I guess, the business or operational side of an esports company, because as much as I love running and being with a team, I felt, you know, my degree and background wasn't my strength slide. But I couldn't afford to be picky. So after a split with CLG, we parted ways and I came back to Europe in wanting to just try and cement a place in Europe. And I, again, couldn't afford to be picky. I got an offer from a team called Mysterious Monkeys. Unfortunately, again, it was quite short-lived. It was just for the split. And unfortunately, they got relegated. And it was the same position. It was as team manager. But during that time, very much worked on my connections, my contacts, and trying to make my name known and what I could be capable of. And towards the end of the split, I got to know Hans quite well, who's the previous director of esports at Splice.
Yeah, I'm a massive, massive, massive fan of Hans. I'm actually going to be recording an episode with him soon. He's been one of the mentors for me in the space. I'm a massive fan.
Yeah, exactly. And he very much mentored me quite a lot and helped me out, despite the fact we were on opposing teams, although I don't think he viewed us as a rival exactly when we're in last place. But, yeah, and through him, he said, hey, you know, I was like, hey, I wasn't sure if I want to stay in it. I'd done it for a year, and I wasn't sure if I want to stay in it, if I could find a, you know, an opportunity to go higher within the industry, because I felt I've been stuck as a team manager. And he said, come have a chat with Marty. There's this guy called Marty who's over from America. Come have a chat with him. So I went, okay. And yeah, I like, had a really good chat with Marty here, and walked out of what was sort of an informal chat slash mini interview feeling really, really positive. And yeah, then not too long after, got an offer from Martin Splice to take on the role as team manager for LCS. But more importantly for me was the European operations role. And for me, that was the first time seeing an opportunity to actually forge a long term career in this industry outside just team management. So for that, it was super, super happy. And that's how I've ended up here.
Can I point out for a second a really important point there? I believe we just heard Grant admit that the reason Mysterious Monkeys was relegated was because of him. So,
I'm not sure I'll take full responsibility. but yeah.
That's getting clipped by somebody, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Awesome. Well, it's a pretty sweet story. And Grant, you're now running both of the League of Legends teams and COD. From what I understand, the Splice COD team is very much at the top of the game right now. I work quite closely with Optic and with 100 Thieves, so I kind of have been caught up on the Call of Duty side of things after mainly being a PC Master Race for the last, 10-15 years. So it's been quite interesting just to see how that scene has moved forward. This is more of a question for both of you. What's the biggest thing that the tier one PC esports can actually learn from the likes of Halo, Call of Duty and Gears? Because from my experience, all three of these titles, their personalities are so much more engaged and more vocal, maybe toxic in certain instances, but it really actually drives you into the storyline of actually what's happening on stage. Whereas if you see a League of Legends team or an Overwatch team or a CSGO team, if they win a large event, some of them don't seem to appreciate the moment at all, or they're just a lot more introverted. Is this something that you guys have noticed too, and how would you perhaps like to move that into the tier one esports?
Yeah, it's a really fascinating thing, and it's not just console to PC, although we see it in Halo and Gears of War as well, two other games we've been in, and I'll even add fighting games, where all sure. four of those titles, or if not titles is the right word, because FGC is obviously bigger than that, but all four of those groups are very vibrant personalities, very vocal and social. During the COD World League, which is happening right now, if you go on social media, on my feed, I see a very constant conversation because it's going on, and all the players are very actively involved in this talk about this gun being overpowered or in this play and why this guy should have made this decision, et cetera. And you compare that to League of Legends, and you have like four people, like Wicked and Amazing, and in fact, most of them are retired players, honestly, actually having conversation, right? And the rest of the players is an occasional GGWP, see you next week, right? that's not, by the way, just League of Legends. We see that in Counter-Strike. We see that certainly in some of the games that have a more reserved, we'll say, personality set. But obviously, just because that's the average does not mean that's everybody. There are great personalities in every game who are vibrant on social media and make great brands and stuff. But it is a fascinating difference. Some of it, I think, comes from the style of event. If you have never been to a Call of Duty event or a Halo event or something, they're opens. And so everyone's there. Like Optic Gaming will play against in an open event, a full open. Now they're not in COD World League, they're not full opens anymore, but they used to be. Optic Gaming as a number one team will play against the number 67 team or whatever, right? And they'll be standing next to some 50-year-old potential pro who's there because he's also competing, and it creates a ability to have dialogue that otherwise wouldn't exist. I think it forces them to be out of their shell a lot more. Fighting game has definitely got that, right? Because it's single-player game.
Sure.
You're all in the same room together. Your friends are going to be your competitors, not your teammates, right? Hearthstone has that. The community in Hearthstone is really fascinating because there are teammates in that you might have the same banner, but there are no teammates. You're not playing the game together. And so these friendships form across the community. And that's certainly not necessarily the case in games like League of Legends, Counter-Strike, and Overwatch, et cetera, like you mentioned. Sure. I don't know that it's a simple, like, there are simple things to apply across because the nature of the ecosystem of those games also affects it. Because, I mean, our Call of Duty guys are going to play at 8 different events this year, I think, that are opens, where they spend 3/4 of the day just hanging out with other players and only 1/4 of it actually playing, you know?
Sure. It's one of the things I've been quite curious to dive into recently is, you know, the leveling up of all levels of talent management and a kind of a performance optimization, not just in-game, but outside the game too. Like, you're seeing quite a few more players maybe getting some media training, maybe getting some business training as well to actually understand their time in the spotlight and perhaps how to maximize that and actually, you know, push their own personal brand forward. You can't force people to act in a way that is not genuine to them, but it would obviously be great just to have more vocal stars across esports.
That, what you just said at the end was really important, by the way, that we're very, like, we know we're not going to get everything right, so we try to learn as we go. And early on, we thought we're going to grow all the brands. Like sure. In League of Legends, we were going to grow all 5 of our players. But there's a difference between someone like Mickey X, who's very reserved and quiet, and maybe he enjoys streaming, but he's not going to be a big vocal on-camera presence, versus someone like Trashy, who loves doing Instagram and loves doing content and things like that, you know?
Of course.
So we've kind of shifted our focus to say, who are the people that want to grow their brands and have the ability to? And that's where we focus on Karma, our Rocket League captain, Tommy, people like Kasing, folks that are very much proactive on it and are willing to put the effort forth.
Sure. Yeah, it's certainly super interesting for me to follow how Kasing has kind of moved through over the last few years. I am a hard-stuck Silver 1 support main, so anyone who is one speaking with an English accent and also plays that role, you know, I'm automatically going to be gravitating straight towards that person. So his journey has been quite interesting. He's super vocal, so that's always like a strong asset to have. Grant, just to kind of mine down into this from a slightly different perspective, Splice and many other esports organizations are spread out all the way across the world. You've got the various business units in their markets. From your experience working in Splice and my, please feel free to chime in on this as well. One of the major obstacles when kind of working in this matrix of individual responsibility that's split by timelines, because I know that Team Liquid have 2 co-CEOs, and that seems to work. They kind of take responsibility for certain areas of the business, but Splice doesn't really have that. So break down your experience kind of representing Splice as an international
org. Sure. So I think the biggest challenge often with international level orgs is communication is number one, and number two, being able to sort of put out what is the core of your business out into sort of the wider international level. So whatever your values are and what your drive is as a company, making sure that that's appreciated all across the planet by those who represent you. You know, and something like communications is, you need the right people involved because you want everyone working in the same style and the same way. Ultimately, if you're working with an esports organization that's performing well, there's a reason it's performing well in terms of actual performance. And that's because there's a structure in place, there's a system in place that works. So it's really important to find ways to implement that across all your teams. So yes, although timelines are different and everyone's working on different schedules and times, having a few core people in charge of the entire performance section of the business is super important, such that it's one voice and one sense of direction coming through. And you know, that's where I will work an awful lot with our general manager, who's ultimately responsible for the teams. And although he's based over in America or Canada, sorry, specifically, you know, he is responsible for the teams and his directive is what we put out to everyone. And then communication with that all applies to all other areas, marketing to content production is a huge one and those kind of things. It's just having clear and understanding communication between all of you, is the biggest, most important thing, such that you're all working in the same way and on the same timeline.
Sure. Well, I would assume that if you're going to be approaching the European market from a content side, like, you'd really want those people locally based. I mean, the whole reason why the European scene is significantly further behind the massive amount of investment that's going on in North America. It's just the simple fact that there is a single language actually spoken across a smaller market. We were speaking with Roman, who's now with Optic LOL in Los Angeles last week, and he was saying that with unicorns, just being able to actually push a certain message out, like you really have to pick and choose your battles, and just a kind of symptom of how European esports has to move at a slower pace.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
regulation.
Well, I'm actually going to jump in there because I don't.
Sure, go for it.
So, I love Roman. He's an awesome dude, and he's got a lot of passion for this industry. But what I hear a lot of people say is, number one, how because of our different languages, we can't accomplish the same things. And number two, that that there's this so much more money in North America, et cetera. To be clear here, there is a very distinct difference between the way that the North American organizations have matured and the way the European organizations have matured. We don't see G2 or Fnatic or Splice having any issues competing with North America. We just don't. The issues don't exist. Whether they choose to spend their money in certain places is a totally different question, right? But I'll give you a good example. Is G2 having a problem fielding a top three Counter-Strike team in the world? Not at all, yeah. Right? They went out and they have made the decision to go heavily after that game. That is a main focus for them. They've spent what I can only imagine have heard is a lot of money, because that's what they are willing to do. They did that in League of Legends to some extent. I imagine players like Jankos are not inexpensive players. So this isn't a thing where in Europe we have all these teams just woefully having no money and can't do it and yada yada. I do think there's historically been a lot of whining instead of doing. And I get fed up with that really fast because I'm a doer. You'll hear me often. People go, what's your best advice? I go, stop asking me for advice and go fucking do something, right? That's my best advice always, because there in esports, you cannot believe the amount of people that want to know. They want to know more information, but they don't want to actually do. They don't want to show you something. Here's what I'm going to do, they say. I do think it's interesting that if you look at it, really, people compare league and league, but if you compare esports and esports, there's tons of investment in Europe. Astralis and ES4ce and G2 Esport, like the Fnatic, there's not a shortage of investment happening. It's that all the investment has been focused in League of Legends entirely in North America. And in Europe, it's a little more diverse and more Counter-Strike focused. So I don't think that's necessarily true. I will say that this to wrap it up. I think this is a fair statement. There's more opportunity if you tackle more languages, right? Like in North America, our second opportunity is Spanish, and it's something we actually do. And I love that we have that connection of growing the Spanish language fan base. But it's A, not required. You can do things in pure English if you want. And B, it's the only second language you really have to do. Maybe French if you want to go after the French Canadians. But sure. In Europe, I mean, we could literally pick 8 or 9 different languages and grow. We could focus on Polish, on Danish, on Italian, et cetera. And that to me is an awesome opportunity, less than a barrier. And I guess that goes to a mindset thing of how people like to complain about what their problems are instead of going, how can I take this and make it an opportunity?
Sure. I do agree with that. There is a very sweet spot of people in the industry that sit on the fence between actually understanding the ins and outs of the esports industry, but also having the business acumen to fulfill those dreams. And, you know, that's the entire premise of my business with looking for a group, is finding those unicorns in a stack of needles, in a haystack, to actually find those people that can sit either side. One thing that I will say from the European side is I feel like the local and semi-pro infrastructures are still significantly far behind, and I can definitely say that's the case from a UK perspective. Marty, I'd like to run a question by Splice. As of the recording date of this podcast, is not involved in any of the pre-released franchised ecosystems with the North American LCS and with the Overwatch League. However, there is EU LCS franchising on the horizon. There's also whispers of a Counter-Strike infrastructure being put together. Has business changed in 2018 since you're not part of these ecosystems? What's your perspective on whether this really elevates esports externally? Because I feel like we sit in a bubble of thought quite a lot, and it seems like franchising for us is absolutely massive, but is that message really being communicated outward? Does it really change sponsors' opinion of the industry? Have you noticed any changes?
So I would say that, I mean, that's a multi-tiered question, so I'll take it in pieces. From a Splice perspective, it hasn't changed the way we interact, because it's not like the EU LCS franchise and we're on the outside, right? Like, that would be different.
Of course.
But we are still participating in the LCS. It has definitely given us a lot of positivity towards building infrastructure in Europe that we wouldn't have otherwise, because it's hard to put resources into something that may be gone soon. If you look at Call of Duty as an example, where, because we know that there's no, like, we're always going to be in Call of Duty if we're a good team, we put appropriate resources based on that, right? Because I don't have like a permanent slot in the league. I don't have that ability to really like know that every year in, year out, we're going to be in Call of Duty. Like, theoretically, yeah, we're at the top of the table, right? It should happen. Sure. But there's always the possibility. Now, if you compare that to, let's say, Overwatch League, where people literally have permanent franchises, they know exactly where they're going to be. They already are driving incredible amounts of revenue, as we've seen with some of these major sponsorships and the deal with Twitch. Now that there's a way to go and invest in future infrastructure, and you've got rosters with multiple tiers of players. You've got them. I think it was just yesterday it was announced that one of the rosters picked up a full academy team. I think it was Philadelphia, because they can invest in the next level players. You've got content heavily being invested into, and, you know, that's something we feel very strongly about, is this content investment. We're actually opening our studio here in Rochester in about a month and a half. It's about halfway through construction. Okay. And it does make it more palatable to do those types of investments when you know there's a permanency. I do think that come 2 years from now, if you're on the inside or the outside, that will matter, right? There's going to be a difference between Cloud9, TSM, San Francisco Shock, for, you know, slash NRG, et cetera, because they're on the inside of franchising, and organizations who are not. And I won't name anyone specific, because I don't know which ones will, you know, maybe join later on or whatever, but it will matter. The last point to your question is, externally, it's definitely like created a level of trust with investors, which it should. A level of being able to go, trusting their word, security, right? To go, I see that there's going to be a future for monetization beyond sponsorship. It's going to allow us to own something tangible. I mean, it's not tangible as in this desk I'm sitting in front of me, but it is something that I can point to and say, I own that, has value, has enterprise value. And it also allows you to build and raise against for long-term growth. And then from the sponsor perspective, I guess the last thing you mentioned, yeah, there are definitely sponsors who see that opportunity to, number one, know that what they're buying, right? T-Mobile is probably a great example in buying into the Overwatch League. They know exactly what they're getting out of that. And that has a quality to it. It has a great partner in Blizzard out of it. It has a level of expectation that you can have that's harder when you look at games like Counter-Strike or Dota or Hearthstone, or games that are more open with lots of organizers and less structured and less predictable, if you will. So I do think that across the board has lots of positives. There's always the possibility of all the negatives everyone mentions, but I've so far been really pleased with what I've seen.
Sure. I feel like being outside of the franchise ecosystem right now, there is a massive onus teams to really make a case for, why should I be a Splice fan and why should I sponsor in Splice? You know, what, it's not just outside of the franchising ecosystem, it's every team has to do this now. Just break me down how you feel that Splice interacts with the community, and when you go out to speak to organizations, you know, how are you packaging yourself and your organization as a truly unique entity in esports?
You know, it's really interesting, because I can think back to something I just saw about a month ago that is the quintessential issue you're talking about, which was, we redid our logo. We wanted something that was more iconic and maintained what our original IP was, but it was much more obvious what it was also, because let's be honest, when you see the snake, and if you're not an esports fan, you don't know what that is, but if you know, you get the chance to know that our word is in the brand, more sports, I guess you'd say. Some guy wrote, you know what, now I think I'll root for Splice. And someone's like, wait, they changed their logo and now you're going to root for them? And the guy wrote back, I'll be honest, I saw the logo and I thought, I don't know if they'll be around in a while, because it didn't feel very official. is what he wrote.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
I thought about, like, we're conditioned in esports to assume the first thought is that they won't be around a while. Not the reverse. We're not surprised when an org's not around. We expect they won't be, right? And so to your point, a big part of the solving that is knowing – I keep using Cloud9, A, because I was a Cloud9 fan before I had Slice, and B, because I think they're an incredibly well-built brand. But as a Cloud9 fan now, and that they're in franchising, every League of Legends and Overwatch fan of those franchises can go, I can commit my energy towards this because they're going to be here. They're not going anywhere. That's the first kind of, I guess, point. But more specific to Splice, I openly admit that for the first 2 years of our organization, we focused extremely heavily on competitive. And we're great. We won a lot of stuff, right? Like, we have a lot of titles and a lot of games. We're really good. We didn't put as many resources into growing the brand. You know, we have less Twitter followers or less Facebook followers, et cetera. But there's, I guess, a couple points off that. Number one, we decided in our kind of focus is that it wasn't about growing to as many fans as humanly possible, but of having the fans that are heavily engaged and really absolutely love the brand. In Silicon Valley, there's this famous saying of find those 100 fans who can't live without your product rather than 1,000 people that sort of care, right?
And yeah, of course.
That's so much more important. And you'll notice we focus a lot on our super fans who, by the way, are very global. We have, I can name some of them, like Quirky in Australia and Haksu up in Europe and Oda in Los Angeles. These are fans who are heavily engaged in our brand. They're all over the world, and they're engaged across our multiple properties. And it's because of what the Splice brand is. It isn't about any specific game, because I mentioned players that, by the way, came in through different games. You know, they didn't come in through all the same title. And what we've done to kind of focus that effort as we talk about, like, how do we better build the brand is we've spent a lot of time building out our core philosophy, our core brand. And so that drives, as Grant mentioned earlier, if you have the right core philosophy, everyone knows the marching orders for it. And then the fans can also engage in that level. Our main core mission is we want everyone to know they belong. And it comes from this idea that gaming is about that to begin with, where you can escape, whether it's a rough life or even a rough day at work. It allows you to feel like I actually wrote an article about this where I said, hey, I don't have to be the kid in high school who's 120 pounds and last picked in gym class. I can swing a sword and be a warrior who saves the world. Right. And it allows everyone to have that importance that you maybe miss other places in your life. And we want to embrace that. But it also is about the personal. And esports is a lot of times very impersonal. It's the internet. It's the anonymity. It's this large community, which is amorphous and can be, you know, we're the world of the copypasta, you know, is the way to think of it. and we want to see less of that and more of individuals. And so you'll see, like, we're building our own storefronts. We call them rec centers, where fans can come down and actually watch our matches in person. We're building this focus this year on more in-person activations and events. And I don't just mean events like a CWL event or League of Legends, but other gaming non-esports events, going to things like Comic-Con and such like that, because they're part of the culture of gaming. And then finally, our content focusing more on the personal, where we can go, I'll give you a great example. When someone covers an esports event these days, they go, we won 5-4 and we interviewed the player and we showed you some merchandise and we had some sick techno music, right? The end. We're going to do some of that too, because those are cool videos, but what we want to be able to do is allow you to experience the event without being there. Like, be able to go to the, to our video channels of various sources and feel like, sure, I am there with Shadosha, who's our on-camera personality, or with Marty, or with the players, etc., and experiencing it because I'm part of Splice. Because at the end of the day, part of why I started this company is because I am a massive esports fan, and I like to say that I'm always going to be our number one fan, and I encourage our fans to try and beat me, you know.
That's an awesome mantra to follow. It mines down into the overall attractiveness of the industry as a whole, you know, the reason why brands and organizations are so keen to experiment with esports or really throw their shoulder to the grindstone with it is because of how hyper-engaged everyone is, not just in the titles, but in the players and the teams. So really interesting to pick your brain on how you built Splice and where they'll be moving in the future. I think if that's anything around just live streaming or VR, AR experiences around events, that would be dope. We've run up against the clock for this episode after having one or two technical issues. So just got three rapid fire questions for you.
I am back, so I can join in on these.
Awesome. Yay. Thank you. Thank you very
many
much.
Many things I control, so Grant, internet in West Berlin is not one of them, I'm afraid.
Yeah, that's all good, man. So, Grant, seeing as you're back with us,
sure.
Let's kick off the first question with you. Having worked with player management and now at a region-level operations role, as I'm sure you know, esports has no working hours. What's your best tip for people listening to maintaining a healthy lifestyle in esports? Or is it not even possible? I've asked this question to a few people already, and they seem to think that try and sleep when you can, and
God.
Actually eat clean if you can.
Yeah,
you know?
So
it's a bit chaos.
The answer is yes, of course you can. Biggest thing for me, which I try and put on the players, is define in yourself a separate between what is your work and what is your social life. What are your work hours and what is the time you are on downtime where you may choose to practice, you may choose to put in some more effort and you know, some solo queue or grinding whatever game you want, but define those boundaries. So you see a lot of teams now going for offices and homes where, you know, you walk into the office to do practice for the day and coming back. That in that separation in your mind really helps you maintain sort of a strong mental presence. And then the usual to go with it: get a normal sleep schedule, get a synchronized sleep schedule, eat well, look after yourself. It's really simple. It's no different to normal life. I think people use the excuse that, oh, I have to practice 14 hours a day means I can't be healthy, and that's not true.
Yeah, and it's an area of the space that I'd really like to continue focusing on. I think that with the structures that are being brought in and actually adding more stability, like Marty was saying, the kind of investments that we can see to not just elevate the quality of content, but also the livelihoods and the periphery staff around players, like we've seen a very successful integration of a sports psychologist with the Astralis team earlier this year. I know that quite a lot of other organizations are looking to replicate that, but what I would really like to see is a kind of UFC level of really going quantitative heavy on analyzing every aspect of performance, be it, you know, are your synapses actually firing at the right rate? You know, are you optimizing your brain with supplements and with a strong exercise regime that actually enables you to play better in game? You know, these are the things that I really want to see organizations taking a massive step forward with over the course of the next few years. Marty, I'm sure that along your journey, you have had some very important people that have helped point you in the right direction. If you had to call us out one name in esports who's been a super important mentor for you, who would it be, and what was the best piece of advice?
Kevin Lin.
Okay.
If you don't know who he is, he's co-founder and CEO of Twitch. What was the best piece of advice he gave me? Interestingly, I don't think there was an individual piece of advice from Kevin, because a lot of it was Kevin saying, look, there were people there for me when we did this, and now this is me paying it forward, like knowing you're where we were years ago. And just him providing me the, I guess, two things. One, the context of having been there. So he has a lot of wealth of knowledge there. But two, sometimes just being a shoulder to cry on, right? Be like, God, I'm super stressed out. I don't know what to do. Can you help me? He's like, all right, let's talk you off the ledge, right? He has a lot of value there because he's been there. If you talk, just I'll separate that, though, from Kevin and just more general, the best piece of advice I ever got. I think the best piece of advice I ever got in this industry is truly – is just go do it. There are so many people that told me about things they're gonna do in this industry, and so few of them ever done anything. If you wanna do something in this industry, just go do it. Build something, write something, create something, volunteer for an org. Stop talking and start doing, or this industry is gonna pass you by, basically.
Yeah, the amount of times I get outreach from either quite senior people within sports and entertainment, or very junior, super passionate fans are like, how can I get into esports? That's exactly the piece of advice that I give them. Write an article, do a meme-heavy YouTube video about one of your least favorite players, start a podcast, do anything, and you'll be in a better spot.
Do you know how many people have gotten hired in this industry because they did stuff like run a tournament on their own, they did a blog, they were analysts on Twitter? I mean, some of the best people out there coaching in the industry started as the jokey term Twitter analysts, you know?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The last point for both of you, you can chime in on, not to leave us on a negative note, but if you could fix anything in esports today across the entire ecosystem, what would you fix and why?
Shall I go first? This is completely biased and personal towards me. I want to fix the state of UK esports. I just want to see UK itself, A, start taking risks and actually investing in the industry, B, stop investing in the wrong games and following the wrong people, and sort of being taken advantage of, I guess, and just see, just to see, you know, I guess why I would say it's my home country, like, become a bit more of a powerhouse in esports, where unfortunately we're lacking.
100% agree. The UK scene is trash, and
that it is.
Marty, what's yours?
So simply put, the way we monetize, we're shifting, we're getting better, but we're still so heavily reliant on the same few revenue streams, and we're definitely pushing that envelope at Splice. But I'd love to see the envelope get pushed all over the place to really monetizing in ways that make a lot more sense, meaning that it's not so narrow. If you have lots more revenue streams, you're more diversified. You're not so reliant on one. Look at how many times an organization collapsed because of a single sponsor or had to cancel certain activities for a single change in the revenue stream. So.
Yep. That's smart. You've got to hedge your bets. And I think from a sponsorship and partnership side, we should be focusing on renewals as well, because the kind of uptick on that side, there's quite a few of these deals that actually drop off after the first year. So actually providing value. Guys, we have run to the end of our show. Thank you very much for the time. How can everyone reach out to you if they want to get in touch?
Twitter.
Laser I always tick. Say Twitter as well. DM on Twitter.
What would those handles be? Just just for years.
Go ahead first, Grant.
So at Grievance Lol for me.
Yeah, good luck spelling.
At Grievance Lol.
I got the last name he can't spell. He's got the Twitter handle he can't spell. So, and mine is Laser Chickens with 3 Z's on the end because Laser Chicken was taken and I just added 3 Z's randomly. So
nice work. Cool, guys. Well, thank you very much for jumping on the show. If you want to shoot over your feedback and thoughts about the episode, we've finally gone live on our new social media channels. We are ES Roundtable Pod on Twitter and Esports Roundtable Podcast on Facebook. We are hiring a digital and a social media manager to start actually putting a lot more content out there for you guys. You'll start seeing quite a few more of these episodes being written up on the Esports Insider, which we're super excited about. But yeah, everyone, thank you very much for your time, and yeah, we will see you on the next one.